Welcome to the ProPublica podcast. I'm Cesare Podkul. If you live in New York City, chances are you're paying more in rent than you want. Or, if you're lucky enough to reside in one of the city's hundreds of thousands of rent-stabilized apartments, more than you should. As we've reported in our series of reports on New York City rents, landlords who collect tax breaks in exchange for providing rent-stabilized housing, which limits rent increases and provides eviction protection to tenants, failed to register 50,000 apartments for the program despite pocketing over $100 million in tax benefits. And as we reported just last week, the problem may be even bigger than we thought, with up to 200,000 apartments missing from rent stabilization rules as required by law. With me today are two special guests to discuss our Rent Racket series. Stephen Werner, an analyst at the city's Department of Housing Preservation and Development, which administers the tax breaks, created a website in his spare time that lets tenants see if they are entitled to a rent-stabilized lease. It was Steve who alerted us to these issues last July, and it's thanks to him that we've pursued reporting on this topic. Ben Kalos is a council member representing the Upper East Side who has sponsored legislation to fix many of the problems we've been writing about. Steve, Ben, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so very much for having us.
Yes, thank you. It's good to be here.
First, just a piece of housekeeping before we get started. I just want to note that Steve is here in his personal capacity, talking to us about his website and research, which he conducted in his spare time outside of official duties with the city. His opinions are his alone and do not reflect those of the city's Department of Housing Preservation and Development, its commissioner, or the mayor. So, Steve, why don't we start off with you? This is somewhat of a unique situation because usually as reporters, we keep whistleblower sources confidential. But in this situation, you had gone public with your concerns by creating a website in your spare time where New York City residents can look up the rent stabilization status of their apartments. And I know you took time to learn all kinds of coding and new programming languages to do this. So tell us what motivated you to create the website and why should rent stabilization matter to tenants who live in these unregistered apartments?
Well, this issue has bothered me since I started working at the agency. I created the website to make more people aware of the problem because it is something that's very difficult to understand and explain. But I wanted the website up before legislation was considered in July to renew regulation laws, which would just continue a situation for another 10 years. And I wanted to make sure the legislature, the city council, assemblymen all had the facts and would be concerned about this issue. And the second thing is, I think it's obvious, even though I'm a homeowner in Queens, it's not an immediate issue for me to have a sense of stabilization of rent. But I can only imagine what it's like for somebody who's trying to raise a family or a mother working with a budget to make sure that she's not going to have unexpected, unanticipated rent increases eating into her budget for food for the kids or medical care.
So how did you first spot this, and how big of a problem is this in your estimation?
I first spotted it over 20 years ago. It was my immediate responsibility for the Housing and Vacancy Survey to work with the data sets that include DHCR registration information and 421A and J51 data on buildings getting tax exemptions. And for 23 years, I have been putting into the report that's produced every 3 years what I considered a fraudulent number, the number 1 million, when in fact, as I add up one by one, each apartment that is registered with the state, and I never get to over 800,000, I said, where are the other 200,000? And they are coming from unregistered apartments in a building where none of the apartments are registered in building-wide, or they're coming from apartments that aren't included in the registration information, even though the building is registered.
So we're looking at up to 200,000 apartments.
That's my count.
Okay. And Councilmember Kalos, we met to discuss this issue back in October. What did you first think when Steve shared his findings with you?
First, Steve Werner is a hero. If all 350,000 employees who work for the City of New York were like Steve Werner, our government would be working much more efficiently, and we'd be able to clean up a lot of the waste and corruption that we see. And I told him that. And I also encouraged that he come forward and understood that his brothers and sisters at the Organization of Staff Analysts, his union, would be there to protect him, and worked with their president, Robert Crohan, who agreed to defend and protect his members for their First Amendment rights to be whistleblowers. and even reached out to the civil rights attorney, Norman Siegel, to make sure that he'd be available if anything happened. And hopefully things are well for you at HPD.
Well, initially they weren't. I was told by someone at HPD that they tried to get rid of me, as a matter of fact. Then they learned that I had been there too long. That's very disconcerting for having been a conscientious civil servant for 23 years to find out that they are trying to get rid of you for doing what you think is a public service. But things have gotten better, especially because of the support from ProPublica and from the councilmen who accepted the truth of my claim, have supported it, and now at work I am finding people coming forward and saying, Steve, I see in the paper, or I hear there's action being taken that supports what you were saying all the time.
Right, and that's one of the interesting things here, because the numbers are just so large that when you told me the numbers, I just thought, I can't believe this is happening. Council member, when you first heard the numbers, what did you think?
We all know that affordable housing is a problem in the city. It's been a crisis for as long as anyone can remember. But the issue of unregistered apartments was an anecdote. You'd hear that your neighbor or your friend's friend or this mother's brother, other's brother, had a situation where they were being overcharged and they had sent in a complicated FOIL request to DHCR, and DHCR had told them that their unit was overpriced, or at least they figured it out from a very convoluted printout of rent histories, and that they had essentially won the lottery and been able to take it up with their landlord and win immediately or have to go to court with legal aid. And so there were all these anecdotal stories, but no one had any concept that it was 50,000 or even, as most recently reported, 200,000. And I think that really put a pin in just how big a problem that is. And as this mayor is seeking 200,000 units of affordable housing, it seems like ProPublica has just found them.
Right. And so after our October meeting, we published our story revealing that scofflaw landlords failed to register the 50,000 apartments for rent limits required by the tax breaks that accompany them. Council member, you mentioned to us at the time that it was a bureaucratic quagmire between the city and state agencies responsible for oversight of rent laws and tax breaks that led to this. Can you explain what exactly is the problem here? Why does the regulatory environment allow this to happen?
We have a federal society in our government. And so we have multiple layers. We've got the federal level, we've got the state, we've got the city. And for constituents, they don't care. They just want things to work.
Right.
But on the back end, and because of how much transparency there is, sometimes the bureaucracy will say, oh, that's not my job, that's somebody else's job. And what we've seen with the regulation of affordable housing in the city is you have HPD, who has a duty to deal with those registrations, and you have DHCR, which is the state entity. And currently, everyone must register with the DHCR. And that information should be shared with HPD, which theoretically should have a duty to do the enforcement. But it's a bizarre situation to have one agency do the registration and then another agency do the enforcement of that registration. Currently, we're not seeing that happening. And as of 1993, the state of New York stopped charging fines for people who don't register, which is partially responsible for what happens. If you're a landlord and you do not register, nothing happens to you. In fact, you're incentivized because if you don't register, you might get away with it. Right. Charging more than you should.
Right. And one more quirk of this that I think I would add is I was shocked when I first found out when I talked with the finance department, and they told me they're the ones who actually give out the tax break and put on the tax bill and let landlords collect these tax benefits. But they don't actually have the power to take it away. It's HPD that has to do it. So it seems sort of very siloed, this regulatory environment that we're in. And so that makes me wonder, you know, what would your bill do to fix some of these issues? Because I know in December, after our reports came out, you introduced a piece of legislation. Why don't you explain a little bit about what that would do to fix these issues?
So the affordable housing registration problem is something that I've been looking at for quite some time, but it really wasn't until ProPublica did this intrepid reporting that really uncovered what was going on and what was wrong. And that really helped me finalize legislation that I introduced, Introduction 1015 of 2015. You can find it at benkalos.com/legislation. And in that, it requires every owner of affordable housing, whether it is subsidized or rent regulated, to register with HPD in addition to DHCR, and has steep fines for people who do not register, and that would be per apartment per month up to $2,000 indexed to inflation. And because even though I am in government, I am a little bit concerned that there may be a lack of enforcement, anyone who applies for affordable housing would have the right to hire an attorney and sue and get attorney's fees and get those same damages that the state might get. So anyone would be able to help enforce this law. And through that, hopefully we'd be able to have a single point of application for all the affordable housing, whether it's new affordable housing or existing affordable housing, and a lot of the waiting list corruption and application corruption that has been found by the Department of Investigations would be out there and transparent. And if somebody skipped you on the line, you'd be able to see why and do something about it.
And what has the reception been from the Department of Housing Preservation and Development? Have you heard anything from the commissioner or any of her staff on your proposals?
I've had a chance to meet with the New York State Housing and Community Renewals Commissioner as well as Commissioner of Housing and Preservation Development, and both of them seem to be interested in this problem. I am hoping to see some positive movement from HPD in this year's budget process and some good announcements coming up. And this bill has been introduced with Councilmember Jemani Williams, who chairs the Housing Committee, and I'm hoping to have a hearing as soon as possible in this new year so that we can finally put an end to this problem and make sure that we're actually getting every single unit of affordable housing registered and charged at the rate it's supposed to be, which is affordable for our New Yorkers.
And Steve, what do you think of the council members' legislation?
Well, amen. You know, it's almost an answer to my prayer. There are some details I would get into, but not here, to make sure that the intent is met, that the matter is administratively feasible, that there's proper protocol between HPD, the state, and the Department of Finance. That's for another session. But I'm very happy the way this has evolved. It wasn't what I wanted or thought would happen in June and July, but it's proving to be a better result than I had anticipated because of the follow-through by ProPublica and the tremendous commitment of the council member here to correct this wrong that has been burning in my heart for 20 years.
And what else do you think could be done to address the problem? I know in the past you've mentioned to me the idea that one way to fix this is to get the tenants involved by having them verify the data provided to the state by the landlords. Currently, it's just the landlords who provide it to the state and the tenants aren't really involved and there's no real verification of any of that. Why don't you explain what you mean by running the registrations past tenants as well for verification?
I think it's obvious that you can't let the fox watch the chicken coop here. And there's another program called the Low-Income Housing Tax Credit Program, the federal government, which technically has the IRS behind it, that requires where the tax credits that a building owner gets, that's like cash money taken in reduction of your tax bill. And it has to be proved that the low-income housing that you're getting the tax credit form for is occupied by low-income tenants. And to prove it, the low-income tenant has to submit a certification of his income and the rent being charged. That's sort of a bottom line to me. It's an administrative task, but it's certainly not something that couldn't be done in this day and age with the computer technology that exists. So having the tenant have some opportunity to input on rent stabilization issues, as is required in the federal program, the low-income housing tax credit program, would be one thing I think would help tremendously to guarantee the veracity of the data that's being processed.
And just one more idea that I just thought up. You know, when you go to any restaurant in New York City, there's usually a grade, A, B, C, or whatever. What do you think about just having a public notice of some sort on
these
rents?
You know what? That's on the books. It's on the books that there be a notice in every stabilized building that this is a stabilized building. And, you know, Williams, 3 years ago, asked a deputy commissioner from HPD to respond to the request, why don't you have your code enforcement people, when they go to a site, indicate whether or not, if it is a stabilized building, the sign is available. And the HPD official response was, we don't have that information readily available. I notified people that I have it available.
Councilmember, what do you think of these alternate proposals to try to address the issue?
I think these are great proposals. I would direct listeners to public advocate Tish James, who has a worst landlords list, where she actually ranks landlords based on how many complaints they've had. But the whole legislative process is it's improved by people like Steve and like reporters at ProPublica and listeners like you. So when we have a hearing, that is your formal way to have your voice heard. And that's for those of you who can take off time from work between 9 and 5, which is in itself a problem. But you can also comment on my legislation online with your own ideas. So for those of you with internet access, it's benkalos.com/legislation. For those of you who are more tech savvy, you can pull it from my GitHub repo at github.com/benkalos/legislation. And you can pull the current legislation as is. You can change it and push it back into my repo. And if there's another place we should have the legislation hosted, we're happy to. And that would be an informal way of giving us your feedback.
Steve, we just saw Governor Cuomo go after owners of 50,000 apartments who wrongly claimed that they were exempt from rent stabilization despite collecting one of these tax breaks known as J51. Now, I know you've given some thought to the issue of landlords falsely claiming they're exempt. How big of a problem is that?
Well, I think it's a serious problem. Nobody really has been looking at this. I think I've explained to you. I hope I don't get in trouble, but I have to look at certain things in conducting the work that I do for the purpose of the report. And one of them is, at times, looking at exemptions, temporary versus permanent. And I see that people who report an apartment as exempt leave the reason blank. Well, that's not a good reason. And yet, there are hundreds of cases every year, up to 1,000, where this is the case, and nobody is looking at this. It's a serious issue. It helps get you up to that number of 200,000 apartments are missing from the registration rolls, because once you register an apartment as exempt, you do not have to report on it in a subsequent year. It just officially disappears.
Wow. And let's talk about affordability, because I think that's the bottom line of everything that's going on here. I've talked with the deputy mayor, Alicia Glenn, about this, and she says there's clearly an affordability crisis in the city, which Mayor de Blasio, as you mentioned, council member, is trying to address with this proposal to add or preserve 200,000 units of affordable housing over the next decade. How do you think this proposal by the mayor is likely to play out with the current level of enforcement of rent stabilization laws? What needs to be done to make sure that the vision becomes a reality?
As I referenced when we first started, the mayor has put out an amazing goal of 200,000 units of affordable housing. And the great news here is, because of heroes like Steve Warner and ProPublica, you've done the work and you found him 200,000 of units of affordable housing. So if HPD would do the enforcement and we pass this legislation requiring registration of all these units, we're looking at perhaps even in the next year getting 200,000 units of affordable housing registered. And to the extent that any or all of them aren't being offered as affordable housing, the mayor may just reach his entire goal for the next couple of years in 1 year, leaving us to set new goals.
And I should note also that Commissioner Bean has been asked publicly about this, and she did say in front of the City Planning Commission last month that enforcement has been lacking and that the agency is working with the state to improve compliance, and also they have their own efforts in-house to boost compliance with these laws. Steve, just wrapping up, what do you think should be the goal for the city in terms of making this vision a reality?
Well, the first thing is, as the councilman says, let's enforce the rules that are already on the books and help the people who have been cheated, not only out of stabilized leases, but also the private taxpayer who is paying higher taxes, like I am, to cover the cost of municipal services that aren't being paid by people who are getting tax exemptions. You know, the police do not take a pay cut because we're not getting as much money in tax from these building owners. The people who do pay taxes cover the cost of police, fire, and schools. It's not fair to the taxpayers, property taxpayers, nor is it fair to the renters who are being cheated from the security of a stabilized lease.
And with that, we'll have to wrap up. Councilmember Kalos, Steve, thanks so much for being here.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.